there's anyone here this morning at the level of Presser Radio, we would like them to honor our 11th tradition of anonymity, which reads, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. We would like to remind you at this time that the banquet tickets are going rather rapidly. We hope to be able to continue to sell them until noon today. Over to him.
Thank you, Pat. My name is Paul Smith, and I'm a member of the Decatur, Georgia, Family Al-Anon group. Hi, everybody. You know, something over 2 years ago, 2 years ago last March, I believe it was, Evelyn Sponsor said to me, sometimes the Al-Anon is sicker than the AA. And I didn't exactly understand that at the time that she said it, but in going to AA meetings with my wife, Evelyn, and then later attending with somewhat equal regularity Al-Anon meetings, I came to know what she meant. At this time, we'd like to open our meeting with a few seconds of silent meditation, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. One of our fellow Al-Anon members from the Decatur, Georgia group is Howard M. And Howard and I have had the pleasure of doing what we call some 12-step work together. And at this time, I would like to ask Howard if he would welcome everyone to the meeting. Howard.
Thank you, Paul. My name is Howard, and I am the husband of an alcoholic with almost 5 years continuous sobriety. And for this, I am sincerely grateful, not only for the AA program, but also for the many Al-Anon family groups. Good morning, you good people. We welcome you to the Al-Anon family group and hope you will find in this fellowship the help and friendship we have been privileged to enjoy. We would like you to feel we understand as perhaps few can. We too were lonely and frustrated, but here we have found there is no situation too difficult to be bettered and no unhappiness too great to be lessened. We urge you to try our program. Without spiritual help, living with an alcoholic is too much for most of us. We become nervous, irritable, unreasonable. Our thinking becomes confused and our perspective distorted. A change in our attitude is of boundless help to the alcoholic and often is a force for good that finally inspires him or her to join AA. So there is no need for discouragement even though the alcoholic is still drinking. Rarely do we see a family that is not greatly benefited when both husband and wife try to live the AA program. Working in unity for a common purpose does more than strengthen both partners individually. It draws them together. The 12 steps of AA which we try to follow are not easy. At first, we may think some of them are unnecessary. But if we are thoroughly honest with ourselves, we will find that they all apply to us as well as the alcoholic. The benefit derived from a strict and constant observance of them can be limitless. We thus make ourselves ready to receive God's gift of serenity. And now I will turn this over to Henry W. of Sylvester, Georgia, who will give us the 12 suggested steps for an improved way of life.
Good morning. I'm Henry Hall Willard, a member of the Sylvester Al-Anon Family Group, married to a wonderful AA gal, VW. By the grace of God and AA and Al-Anon, we have enjoyed this little over 15 years of this new way of life. If you put something into this program, you'll get something out of it. If you don't work this program together the way I see it, you're not going to accomplish much. You got to have the help of Al-Anon and AA, the way I see it. And with these 12 suggested steps, this is our answer. We admitted we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Number two, come to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Now, this number three, me and V took this step before we ever knew about AA or Al-Anon, either one. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Number four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. Number six, we are entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Number seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Number eight, may they listen to all persons we have harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. Number nine, may direct amends to such people whenever so ever possible, except to do so with any of them or others. Number ten, continue to take personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admit it. Number 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Number 12, having had a spiritual awakening of the results of these steps, we try to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. I once heard Virgil say that AA, in his opinion, AA was a God-inspired program. It's my own opinion that AA, Al-Anon, and Alateen are God-inspired programs. And to prove this to myself, all I have to do is look out at all you wonderful people, and every one of us that's here today is a miracle. You know, I haven't been given the opportunity of standing up before a group like this previously, and Margaret always says it's kind of hard to get me to shut up anyway, but I just couldn't get up here without telling my story. This is the first chance I've had. So I want to tell you my story, and it isn't going to take very long. We're supposed to tell how it was, and I want to tell you it was a mess. What happened? One of us went into AA, and one of us went into Al-Anon. That's what happened. And how is it now? It's wonderful. It's enabled, or it's shown me, that there's a way of life that's very satisfactory, and shown me how to be comfortable with living with myself and with the God of my understanding. Not too long ago, at the Decatur Al-Anon group, we had a little page in one day in Al-Anon, and I believe if you will listen to these words from our One Day in Al-Anon book, that briefly it explains more concisely than anything that I've read so far exactly what Al-Anon means. When we speak of miracles happening in Al-Anon, we often include among these the entry of a spouse into AA and sobriety. This is indeed a miracle, but it is not our miracle, it is the alcoholic's. It is not our business, nor has it ever been, to watch over him or her, worry about his sobriety, see that he doesn't drink, that he or she goes to the right number of AA meetings. If we continue the techniques of management and supervision that did so much to make a mess of life during the drinking days, we are headed for trouble. We can and should be grateful on his or her behalf, but our business is with Al-Anon and ourselves. This wonderful program will help us make something of our own lives. Our responsibility to the alcoholic is to let him or her manage their own sobriety and to be gentle, courteous, and cooperative. The AA member, however close to me, is the concern of his or her friends in AA. He or she must be left free to follow the program in their own way. If I am truly grateful, I will keep hands off. From Thessalonians, study to be quiet and to do your own business, and confuse not the business of others with our own. At this time, I would like to introduce our speaker and his beautiful wife, who came all the way from Louisville, Kentucky, and that's pronounced Louisville, not like Louisville, Georgia. Louisville, Kentucky, to be with us today, and they've been with us for quite a bit of the meeting. Bonnie, would you stand up and let everybody see Bonnie L. from Louisville? And her husband, Paul L., who has been a member, now get this, who has been a member in Al-Anon for 17 years, 1 year longer than our state AA convention. And getting some real good Al-Anon messages from Paul at the Southeastern Convention in Chattanooga, he suggested that I read the story of the unlonely husband. So I pass this on to you. Paul is an ex-member of the Al-Anon Board of Trustees, and he's the first board member to serve the country at large. He spoke at the Georgia Convention in Macon, Georgia in 1965, and we're certainly happy to have him back with us again. Paul L. from Louisville.
Thank you, Paul. Hi, you miracles. My name is Paul Lovegren, a member of Al-Anon. And this is different from what I used to say. I was talking with Ruth last night. And back a number of years ago, I think, if I remember correctly, I said I was a member of Al-Anon because my wife was an alcoholic. And then back just a few years ago, if I remember correctly, I said that I was a member of Al-Anon because my wife said she was an alcoholic. And today I say I'm a member of Al-Anon, period. I belong to the St. Matthew's group up in Louisville, Kentucky. I'd like to mention our group. I'm proud of it. Juanita and Bob know this. Our Al-Anon group is larger than the AA group, and this is the way it should be. And we have somewhere around 12 men in our group. And just recently, I also have added the fact that I'm a member of the Louisville Men's Group number one. We're optimistic. We have 20 members in our men's group, with a regular attendance of roughly 14 or 15. The Louisville is bourbon country, I think you know that. And a number of years ago, I wouldn't have gone near there with a 10-foot pole. I wouldn't have gone near Louisville, thinking about Bonnie. To get down to why I'm here, I was born and raised in Chicago, attended the University of Chicago. I played in all types of sports, football, baseball, basketball, track, golf, you name it. And I've only started mentioning this, I think, within about the last few years. And I did it in self-defense because Bonnie used to talk about me. And I didn't want to have people think I was a sissy. And I'll guarantee you another thing, there's no sissies men in Al-Anon. This is my observation anyway. And what the mayor said last night, that's me. I think I'm the biggest square in the world. And I'm sort of proud of it, and I'm not ashamed of it either. I met Bonnie in Chicago, 1939, and we were married in Chicago. We both worked for the same company. And I like to mention this marriage because our well-wishing friends, her friends and my friends, were unanimous. And they, all of them told us that our marriage would be lucky if it lasted 6 months to a year. And that was 28 years ago. We have two children. We're grandparents. And in the beginning, I didn't think too much of Bonnie's drinking. She drank, that was it, period. I used to get mad at her every once in a while. I didn't like the way she acted, some of the things that happened. But it really wasn't too big a problem with me. That came later. And I think this opposites. You know, people that are opposite seem to marry, and boy, this is Bonnie and I. I'm so completely opposite. This is back 28 years ago. But I think that after being around AA and Al-Anon, we are tending to become more alike. And I notice this more and more all the time. And I like it. Why, I don't know, but I like it because this works out swell for both of us. The drinking progressed. Nothing bad in Chicago. We moved to Fort Wayne, Indiana. And this is where things started to get pretty bad. I think this is where we qualified or started to qualify as an alcoholic family. We had this second daughter in Fort Wayne, and somewhere along in the 40s, I was trying to cope with something that I didn't know what the devil was even the name of. I hadn't heard of alcoholism back in those days. The situation became frustrating and baffling. It really hadn't become to the lonesome stage yet. That came later. Bonnie made her first trip to the hospital sometime in the late 40s. And through here, we started to run out of doctors. I think we went through about three doctors, and each one of them finally gave up on Bonnie and said, we can't help her. We went to the routine of sanitariums, rest homes, psychiatrists. I'd like to mention this one psychiatrist. And again, I don't know why, but I like to mention it, illustrates something. I used to bring Bonnie down to see this doctor, and then she would come out after about an hour's session and tell me how she outsmarted him. And boy, that burned me up. And then the next thing you know, then he and she conned me into going to see him. And that was a mess too, because I didn't get along with him either. But in doing this, I think the main reason I mention it, here was Bonnie and Dr. Stellner trying to outsmart each other. And the ironic part, I think something like 4 or 5 years later, I found out that Dr. Stellner died an alcoholic, our psychiatrist. I wish he'd have found AA because he seemed to be a pretty good guy. I could go in here and tell you all kinds of wild stories about what happened. Oh, heck. Somebody mentioned this last night to me. Am I going to talk about the roof? I don't know if she's here tonight or not. But I think this illustrates in a nutshell the baffling process of living with an alcoholic. Bonnie had been passed out or laying on the couch in the living room, and I had set up some work there and was working at a card table. The drapes were drawn. The TV was down very, very low, and the lights were low. A typical alcoholic home. The front door was locked. The back door was locked. I didn't want anybody to come in. And here Bonnie got up and went upstairs. I waited about 10 minutes. I thought she'd gone to the bathroom, and then I was going to go up and put her to bed. And I searched all over upstairs, and I couldn't find her. Under the beds, in the closets, and every place. And finally I noticed that the bathroom window had been pushed open slightly. And I looked out on the roof. I couldn't see anybody. And this was one of those old-type houses with a roof here and then another addition and a big high peak roof up above. And I went downstairs and outside. It must have been about 1 o'clock in the morning. And here was Bonnie sitting up on the very top peak of the roof, hugging the chimney. Now I'll tell you the real baffling part. When I used to go out and clean leaves in the gutters up on this upper roof, I had to put a ladder up, and it was physically impossible for me to get on that top roof. And I'm taller than Bonnie. Now, how she got up there, I don't know, and she don't know how she ever was up there even. She don't even remember it. So I went downstairs, and I waited, and I thought, well, I'll looked up the phone numbers for the hospital and the ambulance and this kind of stuff, and I had the doctor's name there and who I was going to call, and waiting for the thud when she fell. And about 5 minutes later, I'm standing there and shaking, wondering what the heck, what's going to be. Here comes Bonnie downstairs and lays down on the couch again. I don't usually mention that. I don't know why, but somebody heard me say it one time, and this is why I brought it up again. We lived a typical alcoholic family existence. I can remember there that... I'm going to get this spider off of here. fellow member.
Big one, too.
Yeah, big one. You know, Diana and Patty, I can remember them bringing kids home. And this was back in the early 50s. We're talking about this family affair. And they'd come up to the back door, and they'd look in. And if Mother was all right, they'd bring the other kids in. And hi, Mom, laugh, and upstairs. And if Mother wasn't right, they had this built-in radar, the same as I, and they knew it. And they wouldn't come in. They'd go to somebody else's house. And this was an alcoholic home. I hated the situation. I didn't like it. I can remember back there Bonnie begging me to divorce her. And she was serious about it. She'd get down on her knees and beg me. Get rid of her. She was no good for the sake of the family. I went through all these frustrations. And Bonnie went through the agonies. And somewhere around 1952, early 52, somewhere in there, I was sitting in our living room on a Sunday morning, and Bonnie was in bad shape, and I was going out of town, and I didn't know what to do with her, and I had called several hospitals. We couldn't get her in. I'd called the Rome City Sanitarium. This is a Catholic institution. Bonnie's Catholic. And I beat around the bush, typical, that I didn't want to come out with what was wrong. And finally, this good sister up there wanted to know what the symptoms were and so forth, and I had to say my wife drank too much. And all she answered was, "We're sorry, we don't take that kind of a patient," and hung up. And then I was sitting there and I saw this Fort Wayne Journal Gazette newspaper and a little tiny ad, about a half-inch ad in the classified section, the St. Mary's Rest Home, St. Mary's, Ohio, help for alcoholics. I'd learned a little bit about the term alcoholic by that time. So I went and called St. Mary's. And again, I started to beat around the bush. And I didn't know that at the other end of the line was an AA member. I didn't know much about AA. But the response was different. I started to hem and haw, and I finally came out with it. My wife was in pretty bad shape from drinking. By any chance, did they take care of women patients? And Chuck, I think he's still a member of AA to this day. I haven't seen him for a long time. Chuck, sure, we handle women. We have facilities for two women. And by a coincidence, and you know coincidences, by a coincidence, one of the girls checked out about 15 minutes ago, so we do have space to take care of her. So, by this time I'd learned a little bit. I bought a pint, and Bali followed the pint. And we went to St. Mary's, Ohio. Now, when we went in St. Mary's, Ohio, I didn't like the situation there because the first thing that happened in this kitchen, big old farmhouse on the end of town, Chuck takes out a bottle of Old Granddad, and he pours a couple of good stiff shots into a milkshake glass and mixed in, I don't know whether it was three or four raw eggs, and beat it up and handed it to Bonnie and said, drink this, it'll help you. Well, I'll guarantee you that if I had tried to drink it, it'd have been all over the floor. But Bonnie drank it, and she wanted what was in there. And she tells me later, I don't like to talk about her story, but that this Chuck, every time she woke up, would be sitting there holding her hand, and she was going through DTs and in real bad shape. She stayed there 5 weeks. She went to her first AA meeting in Lima, Ohio. I didn't even know she went. Now, this is a funny thing when I look back. Whenever Bonnie was in a hospital or in a rest home or a sanitarium, I loved it. We had some peace and quiet and contentment at home. The kids and I could enjoy life. We could leave the doors open. We could have anybody in anytime. We'd go out to eat. We'd go to movies. And it was pretty good. You know, all through this period, when I think about it, when somebody tries to be both a mother and a father, you don't do a very good job at either one. And I think back about that, and I feel a little guilty about it, but all I can say is I did my best. Bonnie came back from St. Mary's, and she had a slip of paper. And this slip of paper said something about a Fort Wayne annual AA banquet. I think it was the first one, if I remember right. 1952, I believe. And would I want to go? Well, I don't know about other people, other of you Al-Anon members, but I'd have crawled on my hands and knees downtown if it had helped Bonnie. So we went. And that was my first AA meeting. And I liked what I saw. Bonnie tells me that on the way home, I made the remark, I think we found something. Everybody was laughing, smiling, happy. We heard a terrific AA talker from Chicago, a lawyer, and I was sold right then and there. So we started into AA. And I said we, because we did it together, started right that time, and we met our mutual sponsors, John and Esther of Fort Wayne, who are our closest friends to this day. This has been a terrific benefit that we've had. And John was my sponsor in Al-Anon, and Esther's Bonnie's sponsor. But this is where I start getting different. You know, I think that I came to Al-Anon as an AA dropout, because I was going to AA meetings all the time with Bonnie. And this one meeting at Hoagland, Indiana, they asked John and I to leave the room. And I was griping to high heaven about this, and he and I went up to another section of the house, and this, they had told us this was a closed meeting for alcoholics only, and neither of us liked it too much. And we were both salesmen, and we were telling jokes and having a good time up there and laughing about it. And then all of a sudden, somewhere, I don't know whether it was two, three, or four women came out, and they'd been exiled also, sent to Siberia. And one of these gals, and I don't know who it is, and I wish I did, had some mimeographed material about something that was termed Alcoholics Anonymous Auxiliary. And I didn't like that either. I didn't want any part of being an auxiliary. I might digress here and say that I'm envious of AA. I'd like to belong to AA. But after watching Bonnie, I'm never going to qualify, I'll guarantee you. And the ridiculous part about this whole thing, and we were talking about it a few minutes ago, I've never had a drink in my life. I always feel so damn inadequate getting up here at an AA conference. I don't know why either. That's the funny part about it. Because my mother and father drank, and all my friends did. But there's some reason why, again, I don't know. So I could be an alcoholic. I don't know. But through these next 6-7 years was the worst period of our lives. And the reason I mention this is because if anybody is starting new and are having trouble, as far as I'm concerned, there's no hopeless situation. Because Bonnie started in AA, and I think for at least 6 years, somewhere between 6 and 7 years, she got one 60-day token, and all of the rest of the time it was lucky if she was sober a week to 2 weeks. Up and down, like a yo-yo. And I give her credit because she'd drag herself back to these AA meetings all the time. And everybody, when she walked in the door, here comes Bonnie again. Now, I don't know if I could have done this and if I could have kept going that long. But by this time, I was involved in Al-Anon. We had started a Fort Wayne Al-Anon group and affiliated with New York a few years later, about 1953 or 54. And I bucked Al-Anon, I'll tell you that. I went reluctantly. I went with the primary purpose of getting Bonnie sober. I was going to help these gals, the usual type of philosophy I think a man has, condescend to do it. But something started to rub off. And in this process, I think that somewhere I started to help Bonnie instead of hinder her. And believe me, for a number of years, at least 10 years before that, I hindered Bonnie. After coming to Al-Anon, it took me at least 5-6 years to accept step one. I bought half of it completely. Our lives were unmanageable. Man, this was the understatement of the year. But the other half, that I was powerless over alcohol or Bonnie, in my case, that I wouldn't buy. And I think this is because a man hates to admit defeat. But after about 4 or 5 years, I don't know why, but I made this decision and I did accept it without any reservation whatsoever. And when I ran her life, I did a lousy job, a real lousy job. You could see the results in these previous 5-6 years. But when I gave up, I did it wholeheartedly. And every time I went out of town, in fact, I made the statement to Bonnie that as long as you want to drink, you'll have an unlimited supply. This is pretty drastic treatment, a complete reversal from my old procedure of pouring it down the sink and this kind of crazy stuff. But our youngest daughter was 7 or 8 years old, and every time when I'd leave town, I'd give to Diana anywhere from 6 to 8 fifths, and she and I would hide them. I couldn't give them to Bonnie because She could lose them, could spill them. And I wanted her to have a supply by this time. It was going to be her decision whether she quit or not. And each morning before Diana went to school, she would give her mother a fifth. I was criticized for this in AA, Al-Anon, everywhere. But I think I did the right thing, and I felt that a woman, the best place for a woman to drink was in her home. On these trips, I used to call home every night. And I think I always hoped that Bonnie would answer the phone, but she never did. Diana would answer, and normally she'd be there alone with her mother. Her older sister had taunted her mother and perhaps left and was staying over at a girlfriend's house. And in looking back, I think about this, that, and I didn't think about it until a while ago, that every doggone time I called, it was from a roadside phone booth. I never called from a motel or a hotel, whether it was 100 degrees or 10 below zero. And I think that, I don't know whether this is because I was ashamed or whether I didn't want people to hear. I could pour my heart out to Diana, I think, without worrying about the situation. The hide-and-seek deal that we used to have, you know, Bonnie and I, when I gave up, this all disappeared. She'd hide it, and I'd seek it, and I'd find it, and I'd hide it, and she'd seek it, and this kind of silly stuff. It was quite a situation. The step two, this is when I think I started, or hope I started, to get a wee bit of emotional stability. Because before that, I'd been rather a nervous wreck, although I didn't show it on the outside, I don't think. You know, I think it was Paula, I don't remember, somebody mentioned this. An alcoholic, every time when they're going to experiment after coming to AA and they take a drink, it's always with the thought that this time it's going to be different. And in looking back, I can remember that for these number of years, I used to lecture Bonnie. I used to tell her before we went out to a party or something that, Bonnie, tonight, just take one or two drinks, please, and don't get so loaded and all this stuff. And I don't think we're a bit different than an alcoholic, because every time that I told Bonnie this, I think I felt in my heart that this time it's going to be different. This time she's going to listen to me, and she's going to be smart. So I can sympathize with an alcoholic because I was exactly the same way. You know, this line I did, the best illustration I can give of that was a couple came from California, friends of ours. They called from downtown, wanted to come out and see us. And I right away told them Bonnie was sick. She had quite a unknown disease that was catching, and everything I could think of. Bonnie was drunk, passed out there in the living room. But I said, I'll meet you outside on the front porch, and we can talk for a few minutes, and then I'll have to get back in and take care of things. And I didn't know how true those words were. Bonnie was sick. And this couple came, and I sat out there for maybe 20, 30 minutes and worried to death that Bonnie would open the front door and come walking out, and finally got rid of him. Now, this was the story of our life. An alcoholic family in my books. You know, in step three, when I finally realized that the only life I could control was my own, I think this is where we made a little more progress. Bonnie had tried to kill me a few times. I could have killed her many a time. We went through some pretty bad times. And I used to go upstairs and go to bed, and I'd worry about Bonnie coming upstairs with a knife. She'd done this a few times. And I'd lay there awake pretty near all night. And all of a sudden, And this was in Al-Anon when I bought this step three. I gave up and turned my life over, in my books anyway, because from that time on, and I couldn't tell you how or why, I'd go upstairs and go to bed and sleep like a baby all night long. This is part of the miracles that happened in our family, for me anyway, as an individual. You know, I was telling you how we were up in Fort Wayne. I was on a trip down south, I think it was over in North Carolina or somewhere, and I was coming home. And I hated to come home, incidentally. Every time I came home, my stomach was in knots, and I used to hate to go up and open that front door. And along in here, we'd found a swell doctor that really helped us. He loved alcoholics. Why, I don't know. I've never asked him. But he's still practicing in Fort Wayne, and he's still helping alcoholics any hour of the day or night. You don't find these kind of doctors. Dr. Swag. Now, Dr. Swag told me one time, for example, about Bonnie, and this shows you what kind of a guy he was, that Bonnie, in her nightgown, in the fall of the year, had walked about three, four blocks over to his house and rang their front doorbell, asking for help. And he had gotten up, come downstairs, and given her some shots, took his wife's bathrobe and brought her home and put her to bed. And you don't find these guys very often. But coming home this time, I pulled in the driveway, and here was Dr. Swag's car. And this was sort of normal. A lot of times I'd see him there, which Diana used to call him. Bonnie used to fall down stairs. She broke her nose, broke her ribs, slashed her wrists, all this kind of stuff. We're not a high-bottom family, I'll tell you. We're one of the lowest bottoms you ever saw in your life. But I pulled in this driveway, and I walked in the house, and Dr. Swag was sitting there holding Bonnie's hand. And he brought me back in the rear of the house and told me that she was dying, and he had been there for an hour and some minutes, keeping her alive because she wanted to see me before she died. And he thought she was just about ready to go. He'd been giving her all kinds of shots. She developed alcoholic carditis, I think it was. But we got an ambulance and oxygen and brought her to the hospital. She was there 5 weeks. August 20th, 1958. That's an indelible date. Because to the best of my knowledge, that's Bonnie's last drink, or any substitute thereof. She's been sober ever since. And this is the part I like to talk about. Because this alcoholic family of ours started to grow up. Bonnie was sober a while. The girls went to Alateen. And in Alateen, Jesus, Cindy, I know how you feel. They kept our family together. Who do you think was the sponsor of the Alateen group? Esther. I'm sorry. Well, I'll get back to something more serious. I don't like to talk about that damn part, but I knew this was coming, and I hate it, damn it. Bonnie had been sober 2 years, something like this. And I had an opportunity to get a job down in Paducah, Kentucky. And in Paducah, I was worried about leaving. For 20 years, I'd stayed with the same company. And always afraid to leave, always turning down opportunities. I had a drunk in my family. But Bonnie had been sober these few years, and I came home and I said, "We've got a chance to go to Kentucky. What do you think?" She says, "What does your serenity prayer say?" And that was the answer. She wasn't going to make the decision, but she threw it right back at me. Did I have the courage to make the change after 20 years? And okay, we did. And we moved to Paducah. And I was sales manager of the company. We started with nothing, and we ended up being the biggest in the world. I was there for the rest of my life, as far as I was concerned. And I got dissatisfied after about 4 years. And I came home to Bonnie this one time, and I told her how fed up I was and this kind of stuff. And she comes back at me again with this doggone serenity prayer. The next day I went in and resigned. I threw up everything that I had for a future, and when you're getting ready to retire, this is sort of a dumb thing to do, I think. So we went over to Louisville, the hotbed of AA and Al-Anon and Alateen, and I'm glad we're there. It's terrific. And we started a company on a shoestring, and I didn't know about this wisdom part, but it's worked out pretty good. And we're doing fine, finally, after a few years. This is AA and Al-Anon in our family and how it affects your lives. You know, Bonnie, I'm not being very humorous this morning. A lot of times I used to be. I love to crack and tell jokes. I'm a salesman, you know that. But this is a serious proposition to me. I was talking at a meeting up in Louisville one time at an AA club, and I think it typifies it, and they had some ashtrays there in the shape of poker chips, the token club, and these things were about 6 inches across, the biggest doggone poker chips I ever saw in my life. And I mentioned it to the chairman, and he came right back and he says, "We play for pretty big stakes in here." And boy, isn't that true. I went through these various steps. Bonnie doesn't know about it in a lot of instances. I talked it over with John, step four. He was a damn good sponsor, tough. Bonnie doesn't know a lot about this stuff. The step six and seven, this holier-than-thou attitude that I used to have. I was superior plus. Perfection personified, I guess you'd call it. And I held on to my smugness for a long time. A long time. I can't be perfect, but I can be better. And this is what I'm trying to do around Al-Anon. I made the statement a while ago, and Bonnie damn near fell off her chair, that I said, "I hope I'm the ex-St. Paul." And I hope that's true. Because to me, this is Al-Anon. This is what I'm working for. You know, get back here to giving Bonnie these bottles. This is a little bit humorous. I think I need a little humor myself. We're talking down in Benton, Kentucky. And I mentioned this about giving Bonnie an unlimited supply and giving her bottles. And there was this fellow sitting in the back row. He's a little worse for wear. And he came up afterwards, and he stood there and shook my hand, and he started to cry a little bit, and a few tears trickled down, and I'll never forget it. He says, "I wish I could trade you in for my wife." I don't use it much anymore either. What a wife he must have had, I guess. You know, in making amends, I have to become willing to do this. And of necessity, sometimes you don't make amends to everybody. And I think that my number one person to make amends to is Bonnie, for the way I treated her, and then the girls. And I think I have to include myself, because I have to forgive me. And I think I did this with my mother and my father. They're dead now, both of them. And I hope that I became a better son, because through our alcoholic days, I many times wasn't. I ignored them. I feel that I'm hunting now for the difference that makes the difference all the time. I've lived by the golden rule all my life, or tried to. I'm a square, I told you that. And I think this is primary in AA and in Al-Anon and Al-Ateen. And if we treated everybody else like we'd like to be treated, if I treated an alcoholic that way, things would be a lot better. I know that when Bonnie and I go on a 12-step call, and this happens every once in a while, of course, and I think it typifies something, why, I don't know why this either, but you walk into the house and Bonnie says, "We're from AA." And if it's, invariably it's the husband, because Bonnie is calling on the gal, his reaction will be, "It's in there," or "She's in there." And this gives me an opportunity to give them their first basic lesson in Al-Anon and Al-Ateen and AA, if the family's there, when I say, "Has it got a name?" I know how I'd like to be treated if I were an alcoholic. I think I'm sort of a rebel around Al-Anon. I don't buy this hard-boiled attitude. I feel that love and sympathy and understanding, empathy, whatever you want to call it, this is important. When somebody's down, you don't beat them down further. I know the modern philosophy is create a crisis, get something done. If I'd have done that, Bonnie had been dead. I feel this way. I think that sympathy is two hearts tugging at one load, and it makes the burden half for both of us. You know, this conscious contact with God, I've had it so many times since I've been able to get up here and talk, and I never would do this before. For years I told Bonnie I wouldn't have any part of that garbage. I didn't buy it. To illustrate, and I could tell you many of them, hundreds, I think, I was talking in Terre Haute, Indiana, at one of their Christmas banquets. And for some reason, and I had never done it, I'll guarantee you I had never done it before, and this is why I try to mention it all the time now, I had never talked about this Dr. Swag that helped us so much, this doctor that loved drunks. But I did, and for 15 minutes I raved on and on about him. Geez, and I sat down and I kicked myself. Why did I waste the time talking about Doc Swag? And here comes up a lady later, and she was crying, and she said to me, "I'm Dr. So-and-so's wife. You don't know us. My doctor has been treating, or my husband has been treating alcoholics for the last few years here in Terre Haute, and just a few days ago he made the decision that he never was going to bother with an alcoholic again. He was fed up with him. And what you said tonight, he made the decision he's going to continue treating alcoholics." Conscious contact. Why did I say it? I don't know. You know, these steps in my books, and I've thought about this, it's like a stairway. And on a stairway, you go up or you go down or you stand still. And I hope for the rest of my life that I keep going up the stairs and not slide back down or walk back down or stand still. This alcoholic family that was in such a mess has developed into a pretty good family in my books. And I think a lot of this is due to this love and affection. Bonnie called me a Pollyanna. I used to sit there and put my arms around Bonnie and tell her I loved her. I think sometimes she was so drunk she didn't know what I was saying. But she tells me later that it helped her. And I feel that unlovable people need more love than lovable people. This is, I think, an alcoholic's crying need. The most lonesome person in the world, but we're lonesome too. It's a family illness. And I said, illness, I don't buy this disease. And the only reason I heard an AA member talking back a year or so ago, and he classified it as an illness, because you can catch a disease, but you can't catch an illness. So I've changed. I have the right to change all the time, my feelings and my thinking. And this is what I keep trying to do. And I hope it's for the better all the time. You know, when people say, I love you, a lot of people think that this is from the lips of lovers, I guess, more than anything else. But I think men, AA and Al-Anon men, that it comes out pretty naturally when they say, I love you. Because I think these words, they mean gratitude and understanding and faith. And I read an African proverb one time, and I'm a reader, an avid reader, that said something like, let your love be like the misty rain, coming softly but flooding the rivers. And this is the way I feel about AA and Al-Anon, that it is a lot of love. You know, the situation in our family with Patty and Diana. Diana was the little nurse that took care of her mother when she was drunk, when Patty would leave the house, because Patty hated her mother. Bonnie worried about this an awful lot, that she would never get her love back. Well, I don't know how many of you know about this situation. Patty's going to have a baby. She has one child, and who the devil do you think she wanted with her more than anybody else, her drunken mother? They're like this. I get overcome. I told you I hate it. I think it's because it's what's inside, and I want to tell these new people that there is future and there is hope. I feel that there's more than sobriety involved. I like this sobriety and beyond, the family afterward. To me, this is important. I think sobriety is incidental. This is what you come at the beginning for, but it's what you do with your lives afterward that counts. In our case, it is anyway. I could tell you the many instances that Bonnie has put me to shame. One I like to mention was how, you know, when you're wrong, promptly admitted. Bonnie and I had a fight, damn good fight. And normally we wouldn't talk to each other for a heck of a long time afterward, maybe a day or so. And she'd been sober 6 months, or maybe a little more, I don't know. And I was sitting in the living room feeling sorry for myself. She had stormed out the back door. She came back in and knelt in front of me. And she says, Paul, I'm sorry. Will you please forgive me? I was wrong. And that was such a dramatic difference. First time in her life she'd ever done this. This is AA in action. And I bought it. And I've been trying to do this ever since. You didn't have to beat me on the head. I see something good, and by golly, I'm going to use it. You know, this practice, these principles in all our affairs, I do this all the time. In business, everywhere. And man, it's paid dividends. If dividends in no other way, in the way I feel inside, I know I'm doing right. And that's the thing that's important. I'm rambling on here. I'm sorry. I was down in New Orleans, I think Watt was there. And I thought of something at that time, that in New Orleans they have a term, originated, I believe, in the French Quarter, called lagniappe. That means, as I understand it, something extra. The 13th bun in the baker's dozen, I believe, sobriety and beyond, if you want to call it this. And I think this term lagniappe expresses what is promised in AA and Al-Anon in our big book for the future of the family, for the future of the alcoholic and all its members. And I've got a family back, a wonderful family. We're all together. We're a solid family. Bonnie's going up again to see her daughter when she has this next baby. She wasn't coming to the conference. But it worked out that she's here with me. And I'm tickled to death. This would have been the first conference I'd ever gone to without Bonnie. So it was worked out that maybe next week she'll go up to be with Patty, the girl that used to hate her. This family, I think, is full of love and trust and respect for each other, I hope. And to me, that's Lanya. I think that in our case, we perhaps have made some social recovery beyond all expectations that I ever had. This I'll guarantee you. And I feel that perhaps we're a community asset now instead of a liability, which we most assuredly were. That's Lanyap. I think we have some emotional maturity. I may not look like it here today. I think we can look the world in the eye. I think we've made some amends. I think we've progressed. That's Lanyap. Friendship and understanding. People like you, friends. A friend is somebody that you can think aloud in front of. And that's what I'm trying to do up here. Man, we've got Lanyap in abundance. Thousands of extra things. I'm an awful fortunate, lucky guy. And I wouldn't have had any of this if it hadn't have been for AA, for Al-Anon, and Alateen. All of it, the whole package, it's a family affair. I buy this wholeheartedly. Gee, I wish I could talk for hours. I'm full of emotions. Thank goodness I've kept them under control. A lot of times I can't. But I think you members of AA know what I mean. That we've got that something extra, Lanyap. Thank God for AA and Al-Anon and Alateen. I appreciate it, and I'm going to be here the rest of my life, I hope.
Thank you very much, Paul. Those were some messages from some of your experiences, which makes me realize further than I realized before you started that in Al-Anon we share our frustrations, our experiences, our strength, and our hope. Evelyn likes the New York paper. Don't ask me why, because my stomach feels like that I came back from up there with $10 meal food poisoning. But right on a full page of this paper is a picture of a United States senator who is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and says so in this article. This senator says that 1 out of every 15 American people either are or will become alcoholic. It isn't for me to say what your part is or should be in AA. It isn't for me to say what anybody's part should be in Al-Anon. But I'm only bringing this to your attention to point out the fact that there will be lots more of us. I would like to tell one little funny story, and Evelyn told me before I got up here, if I told any of her story, that she was going to hit me between the eyes with a piece of 2x4 when we got home. And I'm a funny husband. I admit that my wife is boss at home, you know. I mean, there's no question about that. But sometimes we have a men's Al-Anon meeting. We have 5 or 6 men that come with equal irregularity. And we get together at one another's house, and we discuss a few things amongst men that we might not want to talk about with the ladies present. And don't get the wrong idea. So I asked this fellow one time, he's a younger member, I said, when you walked in the house and your wife had been on the sauce, I said, did she ever accuse you of anything that hadn't even entered your, of doing something that had not even entered your mind? He says, every time. And you know, I thought that I was the only guy that ever happened to. Pat, do you have any announcements before we close the meeting? All who will, please rise and join us in the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.